Derrière la magie du sport de haut niveau se cache une triste réalité d'athlètes malmenés et abusés. Et pour que ça cesse, il faut en parler.
Avec Jean-Luc Brassard, l'envers de la médaille. Mardi, 20h, sur la chaîne Témoin. Débrouillez dès maintenant.
Cube Radio.
Mesdames et messieurs, bonjour, bonsoir et bienvenue à un autre épisode des Antipodes de la lutte. Pat Laprade, K.R. Kevin Raphaël.
Yeah! Team No Sleep.
Comment ça?
Team Carey Price est sous le... est disponible. Team Tout le monde m'écrit. Team, on peut-tu prendre son pouls? Fait que Team, on va changer les idées avec Bobby Bob, Robert Bob, Bob Bob, Lashley.
Écoute, on a eu la chance d'avoir en entrevue le champion de la WWE, Bobby Lashley, entrevue qu'on a effectuée avec lui la semaine dernière. Kev, une superbe entrevue, vraiment, vraiment cool, le gars.
Ben une de nos meilleures entrevues, puis pour vous donner un peu le behind the scene de comment ça fonctionne, Bobby, on se voyait tout le monde, donc Pat, Bobby et moi, on se voyait, c'était fait sur Zoom, donc l'audio que vous allez avoir, c'est l'audio Zoom. C'est pas le meilleur audio de l'histoire de l'humanité, mais sur les antipodes, vous avez eu pire que ça, so faut pas se plaindre. Puis non, Bobby a été super généreux, puis il a dit des affaires que j'avais jamais entendues auparavant, puis je trouve que on a réussi à j'ai le mot squeezer parce qu'on squeeze pas personne là, mais on a réussi à attirer le plus de jus possible de Bobby Lashley en 30 minutes. Puis ça, je pense que je nous lève notre chapeau à nous deux là. Des fois, on a le droit de se donner des tapes dans le dos. Je me donne une tape dans le dos pour celle-là.
Exactement. Qui se donnait des tapes dans le dos dans les années 80? Barry Horowitz qui se donnait, je me trompe pas, des tapes dans le dos.
C'est dommage ça.
C'était un des jobbers, il me semble bien, c'était lui. Je les mélange toujours, lui et Steve Lombardi, pour une raison que je m'explique pas. Bref, là, on n'a pas un jobber, on a le champion de la WWE. Évidemment, ben l'entrevue est en anglais, hein? Bobby Lashley ne parle pas français. Mais par contre, pour ceux qui comprennent moins l'anglais, la semaine prochaine, l'entièreté de l'entrevue, en tout cas une majeure partie de l'entrevue, va être traduite dans ma chronique, dans mon blog sur le tvasport.ca. Alors, on va vous en reparler quand ça va être publié, mais pour ceux là que l'anglais là c'est un peu plus difficile, dites-vous, vous allez au moins être capable de lire ce que Bobby Lashley nous a raconté. Kev, juste avant d'aller à l'entrevue, on peut nous écouter où?
Cube, c'était toujours un podcast, groupe podcast, Spotify, TVA Sport, whatever. Laissez-nous 5 stars, Frog Splash, laissez-nous des commentaires. Allez acheter la 8e merveille du monde, livre de Pat Laprade. Achetez le gear, sans restriction, oui, mais aussi les antipodes de la lutte sur le zonekr.ca. On a vendu 2 déconfinements ménier, après j'avais pété ma coche. Il faut continuer. N'oubliez pas, il y a encore le code HABS, H-A-B-S, qui est disponible si vous voulez du gear. Sinon, allez-y, achetez, c'est bon pour nous.
Les billets pour la classique KR.
Dépêchez-vous. Je vous dis, dépêchez-vous.
Le 7 août prochain, probablement, Kev, ton plus gros line-up à date. Est-ce que je me trompe?
C'est notre plus gros line-up à date, puis je vais être complètement...
Si je parle de joueurs de la LNH, là, malheureusement, au niveau féminin, certaines des meilleures joueuses vont être au championnat du monde.
John Lacasse, Hall of Fame, Lauriane Rougeau, Hall of Fame. Là, j'ai 2 joueuses qu'on risque d'annoncer dans les prochaines semaines, qui sont futures Hall of Fame. Tu sais, pour être transparent avec vous, là.
T'as une membre, tu sembles la renommée, Kim Saint-Pierre
qui va être là. Donc, moi, j'ai complètement transparent avec vous. La journée de la classique, on vend toujours le double de billets sur place que de billets qu'on a vendus. Fait que si on vendait 300 billets, on vendait 300 billets à la porte. La limite pour l'aréna, là, c'est 1000. Je le dis à voix haute, je m'en fous. Je le dis parce que dépêchez-vous, je suis rendu à plus de 600. On est à 3 semaines avant.
Est-ce que ça va être la plus grosse crowd?
Je pense que ça va dépasser Guimond. Ouais, ça va dépasser Guimond le 300. Donc, tu vois, je pense que au niveau qu'on est là, on remplit Guimond. Fait que dépêchez-vous parce que... Ça se peut que je vous dise dans 2 semaines, c'est sold out, puis il y a personne qui rentre. Puis on va pas vous faire rentrer parce que vous êtes fans des antipodes.
Donc, moi, je vais pouvoir rentrer, là.
Mais toi, t'animes. T'animes. Fait que, sinon, c'est quoi qu'il y avait d'autre à plugger?
Ben, sans restriction, c'est qui tes invités cette semaine?
Ah, ben cette semaine, c'est Fouki. Donc, Fouki Foukaisi.
Fouki qui va être à Classic d'ailleurs.
Oui, puis qui raconte avec quel joueur du Canadien il a fumé un bat.
Oh non, il dit pas ça pour vrai. Ben, c'est légal. Ben oui, c'est légal.
Ben oui, c'est légal. Il a fumé un bat avant de faire l'entrevue.
Oh shit.
Puis il a dit qu'il a fumé un bat avant de jouer. Fait que... C'est ça. Il va jouer sur la sixième ligne.
Ça va sentir la joie dans les vestiaires.
Non, pas dans le vestiaire. Dans son char, OK? Dans son char. Parce que moi, dans mon vestiaire, là, c'est le vestiaire d'église, OK? Tout ce qu'il y a, là, c'est peut-être une bouteille de champagne si on gagne.
Puis, ça va sentir l'encens, c'est ça que tu veux dire?
Exact.
Puis, hey, sans plus tarder, Kev... Ben non, je pense que c'est assez libre.
Ben non, parce que si on veut plugger des choses, on a une grosse auditoire, là, parce que les gens qui écoutent peut-être pas les Antipodes, mais qui veulent écouter Bobby Bob, Robert Bob Bob. Puis j'y ai dit, hein, parce que peut-être que les gens qui nous écoutent pas à TVA Sports savent pas, mais moi, j'appelle Bobby Lashley sur le show depuis, quoi, 3-4 mois?
Ouais.
Depuis qu'il est champion, whatever, là. Bobby Bob, Robert Bob, Bob Lashley. Bob
Lashley.
Et ma si première dit, question...
Si il a dit, tu l'appelles de même.
Ouais.
Fait que,
Il a ri pas mal toute l'entrevue.
Ouais, une super entrevue avec nul autre que le champion de la WWE, Bobby Lashley, et ça commence maintenant. Well, first of all, Bobby, thank you very much for being here with us today. So we're from Montreal. Obviously, Kevin and I, we speak French and everything. The first question I would have to ask you is, were you a fan? It's a two-part question. Were you a fan of pro wrestling growing up? And if so, do you have any favorite wrestlers? And also, was it Jerry Briscoe or JR who recruited you? You know, how did you get involved with WWE, you know, back in 2004?
Okay, yes. When I was growing up, I was a fan of professional wrestling. And it was something that, you know, I used to stay home and watch with my dad or anybody that was sitting down there on the couch when we were young. We were just watching. We had it on Saturdays. So we watched Saturday and Sunday. And I was a fan of a lot of guys. For me, it was more of the contest versus the individuals. Like, I didn't get locked into any particular person. There's a lot of names that stood out, but I wasn't like, oh, this is my guy. I used to love the fights. Every match was cool to me. And as far as coming in, when I got older, of course, I was fans with the guys that did amateur wrestling because I was an amateur wrestler. And so I watched them, followed them when they went to the pros. And of course, Kurt Angle was one of the guys that actually opened the door for me. And then I started talking with Gerald Briscoe. So Gerald Briscoe was the one that actually recruited me, but Kurt was the one that met me first and kind of opened up the door and linked me up with the right people.
Okay, so people that, because we do the commentary of Raw on TVA Sport every Wednesday, 9 p.m., and people will be mad at me if I don't call you the way I call you on TV. So I got to go. Bobby Bob, Robert Bob, Bob, Bob Lashley, DWWE champion. Now, so you had a crazy 2 years. You went from getting married and then there's a pandemic and then you're with Drew and Baron Corbin and King Corbin or no more King Corbin. And then you're with MVP. And then you have matches with Andrade and everybody for like weeks and weeks and weeks. And then you end up WWE champion. Talk to me about those two crazy years.
It was two crazy years of growth. That's what I got to say. You know, when I first came in, there was a lot of things that I was doing when I wasn't in WWE to kind of prepare myself to get ready. There was some things that I was doing to legitimize my character. There was some training that I was doing, some extra training that I was doing. Did a lot of independence. I did everything that I could to prepare myself to come back. And then when I came back, you know, there were some things that the WWE still thought that maybe I needed to improve on. And I think that some of those things were, I think some of those things were just relaxing and having fun with it. You know, ultimately the crowd can... the crowd knows what's going on. If you're going out there, you're not having a good time, the crowd knows. If you're going out there with a lot of confidence, the crowd knows. So for me, it was going out and having a good time and having an extreme amount of confidence. And over the last couple of years, I felt like I built that. Because first, you got to get to that point of humility. you know, where you can take anything. And that's a big thing for some guys to do. Some guys walk away when they get put in that less than light, or light that they don't think is, oh, them, making them look cool and everything like that. That's not where I was. I was one of those guys, when I came back, I was like, you know what, this is entertainment. This is a fight. This is everything rolled into one. So I'm willing to do whatever it takes to get there. And in acting, in theater, and in fighting, you get those ups and downs. So if you can't take the downs, you'll never get to the ups. So there was nothing that stopped me. I've been in a good mood this entire time. People are like, how can you be in a good mood when you have to do that? It's like, because I'm on TV, I'm having a great time, and I'm living my dream, man. And that's ultimately the main thing that matters. I get to be on TV and wrestle and have fun with it, man. That's what I've been doing all my life. This is what I was built for. This is what I was made for. So everything's good.
Earlier today, I spoke with someone that I think you'll remember fondly, Sylvain Grenier. He's a good friend of mine, and he had so many good things to say about you, by the way. Sylvain was one of the first, one of your first opponents when you were called up to the main roster back in 2004, 2005. What do you remember of those early matches, you know, against the likes of Sylvain and William Regal and Simon Dean and all those guys, especially compared to the work that you're doing right now, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it was a little bit of a different business. A lot of the guys there were, you know, you had to go to fight every day, because everybody was tough. And everybody kind of had I don't want to say a similar style, but a similar goal. So when I went out there against Sylvain, I mean, it was a fight. He's not a little guy, and he's not at all. There's not a weak bone in his body either. So we went after it. And that's how it was when I first came in. There wasn't those matches that you said, oh, this is going to be an easy one. Everybody that was a WWE superstar was a WWE superstar. And everybody that was a WWE superstar had, I would say, credentials, or had the ability to be a world champion. So that's what was cool. And I mean, it's not different from it is now. I think that some guys don't have that same mentality. You don't always have the same matchups. Here, I think a lot of the matchups are there for entertainment as opposed to fighting for a title. At any point in time in my career, I always had my eye on the title, some title, one or another. And I think that is the most important thing. And I think sometimes some guys that are coming in the business now don't. They just want to come out here and have a good time. But those guys end up being those squash matches. So, you know, you take the good with the bad. I think that the times are a little bit different just because things are different. Crowds are different. Shorter storylines now. All these things come into play. But I think it's good for the time. And that's what it is. When times change, wrestling has to change right with it. So you have a little bit of this stuff that you saw from before, but you do have some differences now.
So I mean, wrestling has been in my family for so long. First thing my parents saw when they came to Canada is wrestling. So my grandmother, till this day, she's still watching wrestling, and her favorite enemy is Umanga. So I need to ask you about Umanga. How was it to work with the Samoan Spike guy?
Man, it was probably one of the best experiences of my career. Nice. Umaga across the board, one, was probably one of the best in-ring workers. And he understood, and he fit in, and the way that he wrestled for his character was incredible. He was a big dude, but he can work. He can move. He can jump off the top rope. He was doing drop kicks. He was doing a little bit of everything. But he understood. He got it. I think the time that I had with him, I remember the first time they put us together just to kind of see how the chemistry was. We went out there, and I think they put us just in the middle of the card somewhere where we can be hidden. And then the next day, the next show, we were semi-main event. So the chemistry between he and I was very, very obvious. And I think that the crowd saw it. I think that the people in the office saw it, and we got put in the right place leading up to WrestleMania. So I loved working with him the entire time. He's a great dude, great, great wrestler.
I'm not going to tell my grandmother, though. I'm not going to tell her.
I hate him. He's a mean man.
Exactly. That's what I won't tell her.
Talking about Umaga, we have to talk about WrestleMania 23, one of the most watched WrestleMania of all time. You defeated Umaga. I mean, what are your recollection of that angle, that match? And especially, what were your thoughts when Donald Trump, the guy you saved from being shaved off, became president of the United States?
You know what? When I first, it was one of those things where I heard it and I was like, okay, that's cool. And then the person that told me said, no, you don't understand how big this is actually going to be. And I was like, all right, okay, well, I'm going to do the same thing that I normally do. I'm going to train for it. I said, no, this is going to be big. I said, okay. And it started becoming bigger and bigger. You get Stone Cold Steve Austin as the referee. That's one. That made it huge. Then you got the boss in there, Vince McMahon in there. Like, you can't have a bigger feud than Vince McMahon. And then you bring in Donald Trump. And when Donald Trump came in originally, he said, look, guys, I can't wrestle. I don't know how to referee. I don't know how to run this wrestling organization. But what I can do is I can bring people here. So if that's what I need, let me know what I need to, what you guys want me to do, and I'll go do it. And that's what we told him. We said, hey, we need to bring your notoriety. We need to bring some of the people that you want, and we need to get this thing out. And that's what he did. So I think the whole time as this thing was like manifesting, it just kept getting bigger and bigger. We were doing press conferences. We were on ESPN. We were in Times Square and a big billboard. It just kept getting bigger and bigger. And I thought that was going to be the end of it. But of course, later on, he ended up becoming president. And then I started getting tweets and retweets and people sending me stuff. They said, you should be somewhere in his office. And I was like, man, somebody call him up. Let me be a politician. Let me get in there. Let me do something. But that's how it kind of, it just kept getting bigger and bigger. And I thought it was very comical all the way around. I mean, a lot of people called me to interview me, to ask me about him, which I'm not that guy to get into the hate talk. So, I mean, he was great during the time that he was with us. And when he was there, I mean, he, like I said, he came in and said, what can I do to make this all better? And he did it. And it was a good time working with him. It was a good time working with the whole group. So I enjoyed that time. WrestleMania 23 was definitely something that I'm going to always hear about.
Okay. So before I ask my questions, you have a gaming chair. Are you a gamer? What game you play?
Well, you know what? I'm not a big time gamer. I'm going to tell you that first off, but my son got me the gaming chair. So we started playing a few games. I'm actually in the process of playing a game called StarCraft.
Yeah.
So I started playing that. It was something that I played in college and I found it back. So I'm addicted to it again. And then I love all the sports games. So I love NBA. And then I love, all the 2K games, yeah. All the 2K, whether it's wrestling, whether it's football, whether it's basketball, I play them all. But I'm really into the sports game. And then I like StarCraft. And my son's trying to get me into, what is the one everyone's playing right now?
Fortnite, probably? Fortnite?
No, not Fortnite. The other,
Call of Duty?
Call of Duty. So my son's big time into Call of Duty. He got me to get the chair because he wanted it. So I got his leftover chair. He got the new chair with the speakers in the side.
Oh, he got the speakers on the side. That's funny.
Because right. Originally I got this one. He was like, no, that ain't cool. So I was like, what are you talking about? It's a chair. I'll take it then. Here, get the one with the speaker. Oh, but now great. I see the one with the speakers that he has. And now I want that one.
Of course. Okay, so what hit me hard in the past few years is the fact that there's so many black female and male wrestler doing their thing in the WWE. And every time you and Kofi are on TV, I always scream, even if it's in French, I always scream black excellence, because I want everybody to understand that it is special. You got two black wrestlers, and let's add Xavier Woods in it. You got three black wrestlers in the middle of the ring, main eventing Raw being the main storyline of Raw. Now, for you, you saw the difference in 2004, and we're not going back there, but it was different in 2004. How is it for you right now?
As far as like the black excellence, I think it's going to get to a point where we won't have to look at that anymore. It's just going to be the norm. I mean, yeah. It's going to be whether you're black, white, Chinese, it doesn't matter what you are. Everybody has that opportunity. And I think that us stepping up, myself, Kofi, and Xavier, MVP, Shelton, all of us that stepped up this year, especially during the pandemic, it's one of the hardest times in wrestling history. We stepped up, we were running the show. Yeah. So I think it's one of those things that we're going to make it a norm. And that's what I want it to be. I don't want it to be where, you know, 10 years from now, we're like, man, I hope we can get a black champion. Oh, we had it. Everybody has an opportunity. If a black wrestler steps up, he can be a champion. If a Mexican wrestler stands up, he could be a champion. I just wanted to get to a point where it's a norm. Everything's a norm. Everything across the board is a norm. It's a blend. And I think that we are kind of the pioneers of opening at that door. Me winning the world title, Kobe winning the world title before me. Rock, of course, winning it before that. But now it's becoming a norm. Bianca's a champion. Yeah. You know, Apollo's a champion. You know, we have a lot of champions across the board that are black. So I think that right now, this year has really opened up the doors for a lot of people and taking excuses away from a lot of people also.
Yeah.
Because there's not excuses for making it up to the top. Because we showed you that there's no excuses. I worked my ass off to get this title right here, man. And I got it. So anybody can get it.
I'm so happy you said taking excuses of a people because it's so true.
Yeah.
So true.
Talking about you winning the WWE Championship, it was the first time in 5 years that the title was changing hands on Raw. Did you know sometime before that you were going to win the title? Was it a kind of a last minute thing? And what was your reaction when you were first told about the storyline, about you winning the title?
Man, you know what? There was some rumbling about it on my first run. Back in, I think, 2006, 2007. Mm-hmm. So what I've always done when I've kind of heard some of those rumblings is just keep on the grind. Like, I don't stop or because I don't want to put my expectations too high. Right. Because in our business, you know, 1 minute you can be told that you're right there in a prime position. The next minute you might not be. So I was like, the only thing that I can control is the fact that I can work my ass off. And that's what I do. That's me in a nutshell. So when it started getting close to that time, I was like, man, I'm Raw. I mean, there's Miz there and me, and I keep chasing Miz, and Miz would be a perfect opportunity. And then to do the Drew and then WrestleMania, I was like, man, I think this might be the time. But that time, you know, you start getting the butterflies because winning a world championship is not like winning any other title. So I started kind of thinking about it, and I was like, man, this is something that's good. So I started getting the butterflies and getting a little nervousness. But nothing can prepare you for winning that title. I mean, like I said this in interviews before, I didn't even sleep the night before. You know, I was getting so many calls of people and wanted to celebrate. And it was just like, I sat in bed for like a couple hours, just holding the title, like staring up at the ceiling saying, wow, you know, I've come a long way. Little kid traveling around with nothing. And now I've made it to this point. So it's huge, man. It's huge.
Découvrez le nouveau café érable Pacane de Nespresso. Une saveur en or. Un nouveau café d'exception enrichi à la perfection par l'érable et la pacane. Dégustez-le noir avec du lait ou glacé. Visitez une boutique Nespresso pour une dégustation.
So you mentioned The Miz, because, you know, I'm a hide behind my character who says that Miz is the greatest Intercontinental Champion of all time, four-time champ with four different partners. I'm a hide behind my character. But when we talked about The Miz with Rhea Ripley a while ago, she had a funny story. See, Miz was her favorite wrestler, believe it or not. Now, do you have a special or a favorite story with The Miz? Because I got to talk about my man.
Okay. All right. You know what? You know what I said? I said this in an interview before. I said, you know what? If you don't like The Miz, you're jealous. Okay.
Oh.
I'm going to tell you the reason why. Miz is at the top of the world right now. I've seen this guy work his ass off. Now, I put in work also. Everybody put in work in business. Yeah. But there was times where I saw Miz have to put in a little bit of extra work because some people didn't want to give him what he was there for. Because, you know, a lot of times when people are playing a different profession, they kind of tag them and send them along. Oh, that's a kid from the real world. He'll never be this. He'll never be that. But when I worked with Miz, every time when I work with Miz, the level of professionalism that Miz has is second to none. And Miz has that it factor. If you hate him, it's on you, not him. He has that it factor. He's great in the ring. I enjoyed working with him in the ring. And right now, the guy's, I mean, I've seen some posts of Mrs. House, his family, and everything like that. The guy's turned around, $7 million house, Bentley, everything like that. I was like, that's that hate. That's that hate.
So
if you hate him, you can hate him, but the man is doing his thing. And if you don't like him, you're jealous because he has everything that it takes to be a superstar in WWE at any level. He's held this title. He's held every title in there. So The Miz is definitely somebody that you got to at least have respect for what he's done. So I'm a fan of this.
Yes. Yes.
Kevin was talking about the crazy 2 years that you had. Somewhere in the middle of this, you were paired up with MVP. So tell us, how is it to work with someone like him, and what does he bring to your character?
Well, first of all, MVP is a good friend of mine. And when I was thinking about the Hurt Business, it was something that I was thinking about before. When I came back, I was like, some of these guys are a little younger. They don't understand who I am. So I started putting together this character. And the more I put together this character, I was like, this character is not even me. This character is MVP. The character that I was looking at at one point, I said, what if there was like a mix between The Rock and the Players in that series, Suge Knight and Don King? You know, you roll all those up together. And I was like, that's you.
That's hell of a supper.
but I've always wanted to do something like that. The Hurt Business was something that I thought about before, because when I was fighting MMA, my boxing coach, he wore this shirt one time called the Hurt Business, and I loved it. And I was like, man, that's the Hurt Business, you know, the business of hurting people. But in it, you know, it made sense. So when I brought it over, I was like, I talked to MVP about picking up some people and building a stable. But at the same time, I was like, man, it's me and you. We're the Hurt Business. We're bringing a style that we started with to this day and age, because it's a different class. So when we brought that thing together, me and MVP, we started talking about it. And it became cool. Like every Monday night after we left Raw, we would go and eat at this spot. We had chicken wings and we'd sit down and joke. And we'd always try to advance our character. And if you look at it, and I'm not going to say this so much, but if you look at it, there's been a different style that has come out once we kind of start getting things rolling. You see a lot more suits coming in. You see a lot more people, a little dapper walking here. You see some of these guys that are going out there putting a little extra workout videos in there. I'm not saying that we made it, but I say that we're somewhat of trendsetters around here in the WWE, just because of the things that we do.
And just before going to Kev, yeah, just 1 second, I have a follow-up question. You have the most important match of your career, okay? Who do you choose to be in your corner? MVP, Lana, or Kenny Bolin?
Yeah. Why did you throw Leo Rush in there? He's a candidate. Don't throw him out. But nah, you know, it's gotta be my boy P. Me and P are gonna ride till this thing has no more wheels. We're gonna do some big things, man. We have been for a while. We have a lot of big plans, and I think that me and MVP will definitely ride this one out. I think my last feud that I have in the wrestling business might be that time where things blow up and dysfunction between us, and then it'd be he and I. But outside of that, we're riding this thing all the way to the end.
Wow, that's cool. Now I need to know about the suits, because I see you every week with a new one. And you're not afraid to go color. I've seen you with the orange. I've seen you with some blue. I've seen, like, do you have a designer? Do you go and buy 7 at a time? How much money do you invest in looking so good?
Man, you always hear about different athletes investing in themselves, and that's what I do. I invest in myself. I spend most of my money. Like you see LeBron said, he spends millions of dollars on his body. I spend a lot on my body. I spend a lot on my looks. Looks meaning my suits. So I have a guy down here that when we first started, he was a wrestling fan, but he had a suit store and he made custom suits. And he was like, man, he said, let me take care of you guys. Sheldon, Cedric, and MVP flew down here and they got a couple from him also. And that's what I told the guys. I was like, man, we have to keep a level of professionalism because we're businessmen. Because, you know, it's easy for you to put a group of black guys together and be like, oh man, we're ready to beat some people up, you know, all this stuff. That's not what we're about. None of us are like that. You know, I'm a businessman. I have businesses. I run businesses. I have a real estate company. I have a whole bunch of investments that I have. And I had a couple investments that I have. And I look at myself as a business. And I have kids. We all have kids. So at that time, I was like, man, we're going to bring a level of professionalism. Don't let us be a militant group. We're not anything different. What we are is we're businessmen and we have a purpose. All of us have a lot of potential. We just all want to make it to that potential that everybody knows that we can make it to. Everybody knew that I can be a world champion. Everybody knew Cedric could be something special. Everybody knew Shelton could be something special. So that's what we were trying to do right now. And then with the Hurt Business, that's what we're trying to do, is elevate people across the board. You come to the Hurt Business originally. If we do bring anybody else on, the first thing we're going to do is you got to get your suit right. We don't come to the building in sweatsuits. We're okay. Superstars.
So I on the broadcast, I always say that I'm in the Hurt Business. Now, you don't know that, but I'm telling you, I'm announcing you that I'm in the Hurt, unofficially in the Hurt Business, and I got to get myself a suit. I'm going to let you go, Pat. I got to get myself a nice suit.
get you a suit. Make sure that pocket square ties it in, too.
Oh, you want the pocket square, too? Oh,
Yeah. No shortcuts.
That's going to be my answer from now on. Suit up if you want to call yourself in the Hurt Business.
Yeah, right. Wow.
That's good.
You've done pro wrestling. You've done MMA fighting as well. A lot of people are saying, you know, that pro wrestling training is actually harder on one's body. What are your thoughts on that? And what are the main difficulties in adapting yourself between fighting in a pro wrestling contest and in an MMA fight?
For me, since I've made it to that level, it's almost the same training. Some of the guys that are just pro wrestlers, they would need to kind of like humble themselves and take a couple steps back and then bring themselves back up. I've trained boxing for years. I've trained kickboxing for years. I've trained jiu-jitsu and everything like that. So my training is basically the same. I still do boxing. If I had a fight come up, I would do more groundwork. But right now I just kind of tweak it a little bit. When it's more pro wrestling, I do a little bit more strength and conditioning, but I still do my skills and I still do my strength and conditioning. So, everything is kind of the same once you get to a certain level. But as far as what training is harder, I mean, it's you can't say one is harder than the other. Because if you say pro wrestling is harder, then what are you talking about? Are you talking about somebody that is at the independents that are doing a lot of shows? You're talking about somebody that's just beginning? You're talking about somebody that's on Raw? Or are you talking about, you know, just a normal guy? And then same thing with MMA. If you're just doing local fights, you don't have to put in too much work. But if you're fighting for the UFC title and you got a match against Francis Ngannou, that training is going to be a little bit harder than your first fight. So I think it's all relative to who you're fighting and what organization you're in also, and where you're at in your career.
So I have two questions, because you mentioned Ngannou, and I cannot go there. When you see a guy like that, monster like that, some people call him the most dangerous man in the world. Now, my Hurt Business partner is the champ, so I'm going to call him the most dangerous man in the world. But when you see a guy like Francis Ngannou, are you like, man, I wish I could go in there with him? Or you're like, man, let me go eat some pizza.
For me, I like to challenge, man. But I'm not somebody that, like, I fought a few years back was my last fight. Would I like to get in there with him right now? No, that wouldn't be a smart choice. Yeah. But if I got a couple fights under my belt and I took that switch over to MMA, of course I would. Of course I would. So it's not one of those things where, I guess it is one of those things where the fight depends on who you are and where you're at. So right now, if I made the switch over, it would take me a little bit. I'd have to get some of the rust off of some of my ground game together and then get some more sparring in. But my first fight wouldn't be Francis Ngannou. That's why I'll say that much. I would probably take a few more before him just to get that ring rust out and get that opportunity to shake everything loose. But then, yeah, definitely I want to go for him.
Okay, but speaking of dream fight, I've seen pictures of the man with a ponytail. He's has a ponytail now, Brock Lesnar. Now, everybody wants to see. Yeah, you haven't seen that picture?
No.
The picture is everywhere on the internet. Man has a ponytail, almost a man. Oh. But I was like, woo, okay. Now you. We all want to see you versus Brock. Are you as excited as the fans for that fight? Or you're just like, man, I'm going to do my thing with Drew, Kofi. And if Brock's here.
That's what I am. I'm there. Because I've been hearing this thing for, I don't know, 10, 15 years. Bobby and Brock. I didn't even know the guy. I just met Brock a couple years ago. I think I said three words to him this entire time I've known him. And it's just been passing. So, I mean, it ain't be me. I haven't been the one that has been, like, petitioning for this fight. It's people, interviews, every interview they come to me. Oh, what about you and Brock? I'm like, I'll fight anyone. I'll wrestle anyone. I think the matchup sounds cool because I think the buildup for our match would be almost as big as the match itself in any other match you can think of. I mean, think about this thing, like the Rocky story.
Yeah.
You want to see Brock train hard. You want to see me train hard. And you want to see us pair. That'd be crazy. Some of the things that he's doing, some of the things that I'd be doing in preparation for that. People would go crazy to see that. So, yes, if that opportunity ever arose, I would definitely be interested in it. But on top of that, it's not taking away from some of the people that are out there right now. Drew beat Brock in 5 minutes. I beat Drew. So right now I'm the favorite, if we're looking on the betting lines. Then if you go down the road, I mean, Kofi is huge. I mean, Kofi is a fan favorite, is a miracle worker, is an upset guy.
Yeah.
And then you got Randy that's still there kind of lurking in the back where RKO can come out of nowhere at any point in time. There's so many different guys that I'm excited to challenge. And when I say challenge, just give them the opportunity to challenge me for my title. AJ, all the way across the board. I mean, there's a lot of guys that are ready to step up. And if Brock's not there, I don't think that the crowd's going to be disappointed. But if Brock ever does show up, I think the crowd will be surprised.
Okay. That's a good answer. I want to see you and Tommaso Ciampa, though. I want to see Bobby. I want to see Bobby and Tommaso Ciampa. Somebody make this happen. I want to see Bobby and Walter. That's what I want to see.
Really? Okay. Yeah. Hey, either one of them.
He's taking everybody.
I think that's the beauty of having the title is that people can come and challenge for it at any point in time. And when they do, I mean, there's a lot of really fun matchups that people want to see. Me and Keith Lee, they got to give us an opportunity to go a little bit more. I mean, I haven't even dabbled with The Fiend. Randy, me and Randy haven't done anything. AJ, I mean, there's so many different people. Who wins that briefcase? Somebody's going to step up with that briefcase to try to get a little piece. There's so many different matchups that I'm excited about. So I have a lot of matches kind of lined up to defend this title against.
Bobby, we're hitting the halfway mark in 2021. What's the next 6 months like for Bobby Lashley? What can we wish you for the next second half of the year?
Health and wealth. Is that a good answer? Health and wealth?
Yeah,
that's the name of an app.
Wrestling wise.
You know what? There's the biggest thing that I always say is growth. If you don't have growth in the wrestling business, you become sour, you become complacent, and then you find your way out. So I'm going to be steadily evolving my career and evolving my character and evolving who I am. I'm already doing it in the weight room, but we're also doing it in different areas also. And there's just going to be another side of me that people are going to see. Like I said last week on Raw, you know, I took a little step back and became complacent like everybody else on the roster. But that complacency is over. I'm ready to really ramp it up. And we're going to see some really dangerous and really fun things in the next 6 months to kind of gear up for everything that we have. The Survivor Series, that's another one. Survivor Series would be pretty interesting. I said this before. I was like, what if Survivor Series just does a Raw against SmackDown? Have Roman pick his best five and I can just pick my best five and we'll see what happens.
Okay. I mean,
there's a lot of different things that we haven't even explored yet, but I'm kind of curious to see how that unfolds.
Look, the interviewer is winding down. We have a last question, and I want to make sure that everybody understand that they can watch you every Wednesday on TVA Sports. Pat Laprade, KR, Kevin Raphael will be there to comment all your match. We'll do the best we can because y'all deserve the best y'all can. When this interview aired, Money in the Bank will be gone, but you still be the world heavyweight champion. Now, the last question of the interview is, do you accept me as a member of the Hurt Business? I need this on tape. Do you accept that I walk around the city of Montreal saying to the whole world that I'm in the Hurt Business with Pete and Bobby Bob Robert Bob Lashley?
Was you put me on the spot by asking me during an interview while it's being taped live. So I'm going to take a couple steps back. And I'm going to say, you know what, since meeting you, I like you. I like what you possess. I'm going to talk with P and I'm going to get back with you on that one.
Perfect. Perfect. I think that I, yes. I'm a member of the Earthing.
Hey, I got to talk to you there first, but you're halfway there.
Bobby, tomorrow, July 16, is your birthday. So happy birthday in advance. Bobby, wish you all the best for the year to come, for the rest of 2021. And thank you so very much for being with us here today at Les Antipodes de la Lutte, our podcast. And I mean, good luck for the rest of 2021.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. I appreciate you guys. I appreciate you guys.
All right. I'm going to buy a suit.
Get a pocket square.
All right.